You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden. Fire is the most wild of the elements. I'm not saying that the other elements are less destructive. I mean, flooding, tornadoes, earthquakes, they're horrific. But if you put a bucket of earth or water or air in the middle of my kitchen table, sure, it'd be weird. I mean, it's a bucket of air. But I wouldn't be worried about it. A bucket of fire, on the other hand, please don't bring a bucket of fire into my house. As Australians, we have a love-hate relationship with fire, from barbecues to bushfires. Personally, I like it when fire adorns a birthday cake and I get a free wish for blowing it out. Safe and sound. Philippe Perez wanted to meet some of the folks who aren't so scared of fire as I am. In fact, the fire twirl is tame.
Step girl, or start living with your mother. So don't play with me, cause you're playing with fire.
Okay, so I'm here at the Albert Park Yacht Club, where a class of fire twirlers are working on their skills inside this really big hall. It's pouring with rain outside, so unfortunately I'm not going to see a bunch of actual fire. But what we're going to hear a lot of footsteps twisting around the floorboards inside this hall. So let's go up.
Now, 360 travel, I'm sort of running, my body and the staff are running down and east of the line, and I'm going to flip myself through. Oh, it's best I just demonstrate, okay?
Fire performance in general is any sort of performance or craft that involves the use of fire flames as its primary tool, if you want to call it that.
Chris Ellis from the Fireworks Dance Troupe.
And there's many that drop into that fire-breathing, fire-eating, body-trailing known as fakir. There's the poi, the staff, there's fire devil sticks, fire hula hoops. We've done fire with aerialists. You've got belly dancers with fire fans and fingers and different candles and bits all over their body. All of these things can be done. And there's I'm sure there's things haven't been invented yet. There's been a lot of development gone into from all over the world. It's a completely global phenomenon.
How do we go back the way we came? Simple. Remember the rule. Two of the same steps. I'm going to do two of the same steps. Whatever my last step was that I finished, the reverse step, let's say, I do another reverse. If it was a forward step, I do another forward. So even though we've changed our direction, we're moving in a different, the staff is still travelling, still rotating exactly the same as it was. The double step at the end upsets the staff.
Look, it was really serendipitous in the fact that I had a bit of an interest in circus at the time. We're going back 15 years now, and a friend of mine came back from Thailand. He'd been over there for a bit of a holiday, brought back some fire poi, said, "Have a look at this." I had never seen it before. Showed me a few things, picked it up. It just came to me like that, and just became obsessed, basically, and just went off looking for anything that I could twirl and set fire to. And then 15 years later, I'm still doing it, and I've added a number of other things to the repertoire. But that's how you get started. It's something serendipitous. Fire chooses you. You don't choose the fire. And that's just how it ends up. One day you're not a fire person, and then next you are.
What you're hearing is a performance by fire poi artist Sally Wilmot. It involves swinging tethered weights through a variety of rhythmical patterns, often at a pretty fast speed. Here she's twirling in the grasses of a park in the northern Melbourne suburbs. It's night and the lights on the road nearby pale in comparison to the flares and sparkles that flow out of the weights that she's swinging.
My name's Sally Wilmot, and I've been doing poi on and off for about 3 to 4 years. I went to a university and I studied theatre media in Bathurst for quite a while. And Bathurst, even though it's in a country town, it has a really nice alternative sort of culture as well. It's really close to the Blue Mountains. There's a lot of fire twirling there. There's a lot of circus arts. It's really creative and a lot of fun. So the university I went to in Bathurst, Charles Sturt Uni, we were really encouraged to learn different circus skills, and one of the circus skills is obviously poi. So I got really into poi, and my best friend got really into stick, and we travelled to the Blue Mountains, picked up our own equipment, and we used to always do it outside our dorms, like just practice out there at night, and we loved it. Like, we got really into it. We learned heaps of cool moves and new tricks. I think at first it was like to impress people, because it looks really cool if you're throwing fire around, and I think we were doing it to impress the guys. So that happened. Well, at the time, yeah, when we were like 19. My friend who did stick, she's now one of the guys who she was always teaching, is her long-term boyfriend of 5 years. So I'd say, yes, one of us, we worked very effectively.
Back at the yacht club, Chris got into a huge amount of stories, both fascinating and dangerous.
I'm a fire breather as well. Fire breathing at a gig. During the gig, I had a bit of the vapor and the fuel actually make its way down to my lungs. That caused a form of chemical pneumonia. Lungs started, you know, collapsing. Oxygen levels plummeting. Ended up in the Alfred Hospital on emergency, on life support. Brought me back from the dead practically. 6 to 8 weeks, I think it was, before I was back up on my feet. Couldn't even walk, and I really saw the pointy end of what fire can do. Built a whole new respect. I thought I had respect for fire, and it built even more respect for fire after that. But I survived. I got better. I made sure I didn't do the same mistakes again, and I'm still doing it all these years later.
The class is testing safety methods here. Each student is dropping their sticks to the floor in an imaginary spot about a metre in front of them. Are there any rules to fire performance, like any basic rule of thumbs that people should adhere to when you have a fire twirler class, or if you're doing a performance like that?
Safety. You know, three things you got to take care of. First one, safety. Second one, safety. And third one, safety. It's in a medium that can easily get out of control. It can be very ominous when accidents happen. Anybody who's been through a house fire, a bush fire, or anything like that can tell you exactly how ominous it is and how it can strike fear into you straight away. So it's about safety and respect for the flame and what it can do. If you have respect for it, you treat it with respect, you treat it the way you're supposed to treat it, everything will be good.
Instead of going around like that, yeah, let's just go like that, yeah, and then unwind the feet. And then do a forward crossover, backwards, forward.
Robbie Williams was out here a few years back and doing his tour, and he did a big show at Docklands Stadium, and I did his after party, and did a bit of performing for him and his guests and whatever, and ended up having a beer with him afterwards and having a chat about the finer details of rock star lifestyle and the downside to it, and maybe what we had in common as a fire performer and a, you know, world famous rock star. We had a few things in common, but not all that much. He had far more girls than I had, but you know, so you can find yourself in strange situations I did Beyonce's, Jay-Z's birthday. They were both out here for her tour, and she put on a private birthday party for Jay-Z, and we got invited to go and do a fire show, and we were there, we got dressed, we had everything prepped up, ready to go, and then suddenly she just changed her mind out of the blue and decided she wanted some like can-can dances or something like that. So they just paid us and said, go home. Strange things happen like that, so...
I suppose you got paid in the end, so...
We got paid. I wasn't going to walk out of the door without getting paid.
Will not lose. sun on it. I sell ice in the winter. I sell fire in hell. I am a hustler, baby. I sell water to a well. I
was Philippe Perez with that story. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden, and today we're telling stories of fire. Cities and fire don't go well together, but maybe they should. In Melbourne's Federation Square, for 1 month every winter, there's a campfire in the city. That's what this next story is about. All the Best's features executive producer, Jess O'Callaghan. What drew you to the flame?
It's really weird. It's like Fed Square's this like alien-looking grey mass of... It looks like what they thought the future would look like a few years ago with LED lights scrolling along grey angular buildings. And then in the middle of all that weird city futuristicness is just this campfire, which is like the oldest thing ever. Plus it's warm and it's really cold in Melbourne at the moment. So it's really nice that there's a fire there.
So were there many people hanging around while you were there?
Yeah, there were always people hanging around. There was one guy, he like was traveling and he'd literally just landed in Melbourne and he wanted to know if this was normal. Like he was just like, this city, I've heard it's the most livable city in the world. Is this why? And I'm like, I guess in a way. Not many other cities would let you have a campfire in the middle of an urban space. You visited the fire in previous years.
Yeah, I visited the fire in previous years. And yeah, it was nice. People just sat around and chatted and ate food and relaxed. It was nice.
So like when you're looking at a fire, you could be anywhere. Like when you're just staring into a fire, it's like all you can see. You're not looking at everything around the fire. So I think when you're sitting around the fire in the middle of the city, it doesn't feel like you're in the middle of the city anymore. It like feels like you're anywhere.
They're pretty mesmerizing, I guess. They're almost like a really ancient version of TV.
Yeah. And do you think that's where like telling stories around the fire started, is that you just stare at the fire and you can say anything. You're just like just hypnotized by it.
And so Federation Square is made up as... like a meeting place and a point where, like a town square almost, where you're supposed to go and share ideas and stories. And the fire is, again, that is that the idea of the fire as well, to draw people there and have a focal point where they can all get around? And
yeah, I think so. It was definitely about like bringing people together, and that's what Rob Bundle, who designed the fire, told me.
My name is Rob Bundle. I'm the coordinator with Lighting Winner, the Campfire Land Park WAN. And we've been running this for, this is our 8th year now, so yeah.
The opening was beautiful. I loved how everyone kind of like moved from one spot and then all moved together to the next spot and then kind of all ended up in the middle. It was amazing.
It was a beautiful night and the weather held off, and it was just one of them like amazing kind of concepts where people are just drawn together. I think by natural attrition that that the joys of a campfire and the joys of lights and bells and singing in winter is something to behold, I feel.
Can you tell me a bit about the fire and what the sort of meaning behind the fire
is? Well, Lampart Wien is a very spiritual connection to country and connection to land and connection to everything, really. It brings the warmth of heart, the spirit of heart. It keeps the very essence of life in its comfort zone, in its warmth. So almost like the baby in the womb, you know. As I said, this is our 8th year now with the Lighting Winner and stuff. So we're having the stones in a range in a circle, how we've got in a beautiful circle with the wider sandstones around, with the volcanic rocks in between as well. And of course the volcanic rocks in the middle in the fireplace itself, so it's built up. And then we've got our installation. And this year is shrines. So we decided the way for us to go for this year would be to highlight the shrines and to have the shrine of the planets. So the shrines of the planets are in place now. And we've got the little spirit figures in there too as well, dancing in there and just keeping the space in a beautiful place.
I tell you what, you really got to hand it to the redheads. For much of history, they've been outcast, marginalised, thought of as monsters and freaks. Even science is against them. I mean, really, who ever heard of an incomplete dominant gene? But hey, here we are in the 21st century and they're still kicking about. Bec Fiery has red hair, and she wondered whether having a fiery mop gave you a fiery personality.
And Firecrotch is like that classic example of a redhead nickname. Can you give me
any
more?
Is Firecrotch really a common nickname?
Yeah.
Ginger Nut is way more common than Firecrotch.
For you, maybe. Ginger, I don't have nuts, so I never got that one.
Thanks to the seemingly endless fascination with the colour of our pubic hair, there's no shortage of nicknames alluding to whether or not the flame in a redhead's hair translates to a flame down there. Redheads, or gingers, or carrot tops, or blueies are forever being nicknamed, sometimes adored, and sometimes sadly subjected to abuse.
But and they like emailed all of the redhead guys, like you could see it in the like two, or like CC'd or whatever, was it just all redhead kids? And something going off at us about being unattractive or something like that.
That's harsh.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
That's my brother, Sam. In our family, my dad, my brother and I are all redheads. It's in the majority, and I didn't really see it as anything unusual. My mum's the only family member without the orange locks, but it's in her family too, and she told me she knew I was going to have red hair before I was even born.
When there was light on it, you could see that it was sort of a little wispy down, but it was, you could see the auburn in it. Yeah.
And it went from a wispy down to a curly, messy mop, am I right?
Yeah, you were a wild and woolly little one. Yes, yeah. It was nothing for you to sort of be dressed up in a pair of sort of really daggy track pants and a skivvy and put on a tutu and wings and become a fairy. And the crowning glory was these tumbling curls that would sit underneath some sort of halo or mantle that sort of became a rather magical little image.
When I was a little kid, I didn't let anyone ever, ever brush my hair. And I certainly wouldn't let anyone tell me I had red hair.
So we're politely sort of minding our own business in a queue one day, and I'm chatting away to you, and this old woman in front of us, behind us, might have walked past us, admiringly dabbing your head and saying, "Oh, what beautiful red hair." To which you responded and drew yourself up to your full 2.5-year-old height and said, "My hair is not red, it's strawberry blonde." Which did take the woman back a little, and I don't think she continued the conversation after that, but I thought, well, that put her in her place, didn't it? So, yes. I did have to sort of hide a bit of a smirk, because you are supposed to respect your elders, but it was such a classic coming out of the mouth of a babe. You know, pardon me, I'm not redhead, I'm strawberry blonde.
It's funny to me now hearing these stories about the linguistic games I used to play with my identity. Back then, no one was allowed to call me Beck either, only Rebecca. And even though I grew up to proudly call myself a redhead and proudly call myself Beck, back then I was strawberry blonde.
But I guess every little thing that's different about someone can be turned into a target so easily.
That's Parker, one of my best friends.
And, like, we'd like to think that people judge us purely on what we say and what we think and how, like, the real us, which is inside. But so much of our judgment is made on first glance. So if you change something physically, your interaction with others is going to be different and your life is going to be different from that.
I met Parker at high school, back when he was kind of awkward, lanky, with naturally bright orange hair. Within a few months, though, that had changed.
I wanted to go chestnut brown, that's right. So I got hair dye from the supermarket and I'm like, I can do this myself. I can do this overnight. And I, like, put it all in my hair myself. I was a bit embarrassed, so I didn't want to, like, ask for help from my sister or anything. So I just kind of, like, put it in myself and, like, left the timer on. Forgot to set the timer. So I've left it in for an extra 10 minutes. I've gone and washed it all out in the shower, looked in the mirror and gone, holy crap, my hair is black/purple. And I walked out and I freaked and everyone laughed so hard. And I was, like, lying on the ground and I was like, what did I do?
Oh, so well, it was an accident.
Yeah, it was an accident. I accidentally dyed my hair black.
But you still had the desire to change your hair colour from red to something else?
I wanted a change in my life. It wasn't that I didn't like my red hair. It was more than anything that I was just sick of looking the same. I wanted to have a different look for a different me than I was becoming.
My only foray into hair dye was a blonde streak in my 13-year-old side fringe, a la Lindsay Lohan in Freaky Friday. But up until fairly recently, I guess I clung to the idea that if I looked a certain way, dressed a certain way, held myself in a certain way, then I could prove that I was the adult I was trying to be. But isn't part of becoming an adult just accepting who you are? That is, underneath any superficial change in your appearance.
What is it, 5 years later, after I've changed my hair 3 times, I went back to red.
Are you proud of your hair colour?
I'm proud of my hair colour. I've learned to love it over time.
Did you have to learn?
Yeah, for sure. Only because, like, it's not just hair colour, it's redheads. You subscribe to a complete physicality of being a redhead. Like, you have to accept that you're going to have pale skin, you're more prone to getting sunburn and having freckles. It's just, it's so eye-catching in a crowd. When you look out from, like, the top of Melbourne Central or from the top of a skyscraper and you look down on the whole city and, like, a redhead is just in a crowd of 1,000 other people, it just catches your eye.
The idea of being exotic isn't something white middle-class Australians feel all that often, but there's an instant and vibrant appeal that sometimes springs from our heads. Travelling through Asia, I've had locals wanting to touch my hair or take my photograph. My brother and I, and I'm sure many more redheads before and after us, were subjected to a lot of clucking from little old ladies at shopping centres complimenting our gorgeous locks.
I know that when I was a kid, older people would kind of come up and be like, kind of, I guess, talking to mum rather than me, because when I was quite young, they'd be like, oh my God, he's got beautiful hair. Like, I guess, I don't know, they like the colour of it. And I was just thinking...
You had curly hair as well.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of had a mop of curly orange locks, and I guess it stands out.
Growing up, there was a sense that my hair colour was something special, and it wasn't until high school that I realised that turned me into a target.
I can remember the nicknames and, like, just getting called Red or Bluey or whatever it was.
Do you remember any other nicknames?
It seemed to be Bluey a lot, especially at the football club. Get Bluey from, like, the older blokes. I don't know if... Maybe Carrot Top. But not kind of one that's stuck or anything. Just every now and then. Bluey's the one that I can recall the most frequent. And then, obviously, the recent phenomena is Ranga.
Do you think it's a phenomena?
Well, it's something that I hadn't ever had in the past. It's kind of the last, I don't know now, it's probably a little bit longer than I feel like. It feels like in the last couple of years, which has probably been around for like at least 5 years or something like that. Yeah, it's a new one to me, or it was a new one at some point.
I'd never been teased for my hair colour before, until I was about 14. When I heard the word Ranga for the first time. I realise now I'm lucky. So many redheads are teased so much earlier than I was. But I didn't know hair colour was even a thing you could ever be made fun of until the seemingly overnight evolution of Ranga. If a stranger calls me that now, I'll call them out on it. But for some, it can be friendly, since I've taken ownership of it, reappropriated it, like certain words I don't think I should be allowed to say on the radio. My hair colour is so tightly wound with my identity. It's the first and usually only thing I'll use when describing my appearance. This colour is what I think and feel I am, not just what I see in the mirror.
I think when you're a teenager, you want to be like everyone else. It's like the whole, everyone wants to fit in. And when you get older, everyone wants to not fit in. Like, no one wants to be categorised or any of those things. So any difference, it's probably a bit of an explanation for, like, tattoos and piercings and, well, most things really are kind of an attempt to stand out rather than to fit in.
We've got it easy because we don't have to try.
Yeah, so it's, yeah. it's done for me.
Maybe it's just vanity, some attempt to think of myself as special because I'm different. The same way there's sometimes a nod of approval between gingers or a recognition of our shared experience. But having been targeted and branded, I've come to take ownership of this fire. As much as I fly the red flag and own my colour and wear these flames with pride, I fully accept on the inside it doesn't really reflect on who we are, because we all bleed the same colour anyway, red.
That piece was produced by Beck Fari. This episode of All the Best was produced at Sin Radio in Melbourne in association with FBI Radio in Sydney and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Thanks to all the producers who contributed to this episode, Philippe Perez and Beck Fari. Our features executive producers are Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan. Our community coordinator is Pip Rasmussen. Our executive producer is Jordana Caputo. And I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Oh!